Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff with myself, Cathal Minogue. The Premier League is back. And so is Colin Bouygues from Off The Ball. He'll be in to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures and in particular the Manchester Derby. Alex Byrne from the Chelsea Supporters Club in Dublin, he's going to be on for a chat. And we must talk about what's going on with Nottingham Forest. Diehard Forest fan Callum Farmer, he'll be in to give us his thoughts on what's really going on with the club. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. We are back. The Premier League is back. Another international break over and done with, and one to forget for Ireland fans. 2-2 draw with Hungary in the Aviva. A great night. And then we thought, you know what, we'll head over to Armenia and just get a win. And we lost 2-1. But look, the good news is the Premier League is back. And there's a bit to talk about as well. Certainly Nottingham Forest have been in the headlines this week. They sacked their manager, Nuno Espirito Santo, and then swiftly appointed former Tottenham boss Ange Postecoglou. And I was thinking, there's only one man to talk to. Yes, we have a Nottingham Forest fan here in Marconi House, where we record this show. Callum Farmer from Spin Breakfast, the producer of Spin Breakfast. What, actually, Callum, what's your official title?
Breakfast show producer of Fully Charged on Spin 103.8. That is me. I remember, Cathal, you approached me in the kitchen a couple of weeks ago being like, will you come onto the podcast to talk about Forest when something big happens? And knowing Nottingham Forest is, we're always in the news for something. Yeah. So I wasn't expecting it to be so soon, but here we are. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining me. First of all, you're from Nottingham.
Yes, absolutely. You probably, everyone thinks that I'm kind of from London. I don't have the Cockney, like, how's it going kind of accent, but no, I am. I'm born and bred Nottingham. I had a season ticket for Forest between 2009 and 2011, and I've got photos with me with Steve Stone back in the day from when I was like, wow, 1.5 years old. So yeah, brought up through and through Nottingham Forest.
I kind of wish you did have the Cockney accent. That'd be great.
Apples and pears.
How long are you living in Dublin?
I've been here, it'll be 8 years next month, so still no Irish accent picked up, but every time I go home to my mum, she says, you sound completely different. I pick up your mans and your wands a little bit, and they're all like, yeah, what's he talking about?
And do you get over for many games in a year now?
Last year I got over for about 5 or 6, and I got some big hitters. I got Liverpool at home, I got Man City at home, I got Spurs at home. And out of those 3 games there, we won 2 of them and drew against Liverpool. Last season, honestly, no one was expecting anything that happened. And there was the whole kind of malarkey around the summer. Will Forest get the Conference League or the Europa League? And we were pushing for Champions League. And for us to be disappointed at the end of last season to not get Champions League football after 2 seasons of fighting relegation, and I think we survived on the final day on the season beforehand, it was just a lovely ride to be on. And I don't know what this season's going to bring. I would happily take a great European run and mid-table finish, because where we are, no one even expected us to be in the top half last year, let alone finish in the top 7. Like,
yeah. Before we get on to why you're in and talk about sacking managers and hiring managers, talk to me a bit about last year. Like, it must have been pretty exciting. At any stage during the year, were you thinking, is there another Leicester on the cards here?
Everyone was kind of comparing us to the Leicester season. And there was never anything in my mind, even though if you speak to my friends, we were all talking about winning the league. There was never really anything serious in my mind that we were going to win the league. We didn't have and you kind of saw at the end of last season that we did peter off, and all of the pundits were saying, oh, they can't sustain it. They can't sustain it. They're not going to do it. And you look at the games where we lost points last year. I was at the game, the Leicester match, where we were at home, and we drew 2-2 at that game. Leicester were already down at that point, and they're the closest thing to rivals that we had in the league last season. It was an East Midlands derby. Derby County would be our big rivals, but we haven't played them in about 7 years because they went down to League One. So yeah, we did peter off. So where we finished last season, I was happy with, because like Nuno won 3 manager of the seasons. Matt Sells won the Golden Glove Award joint with David Raya in Arsenal. We were having these players who have kind of been cast-offs from other teams, your Anthony Elangas, your Callum Hudson-Odoi's, these players that never made it at their big name clubs, that were coming to Forest, and like, we sold Alanga in the summer for 50 odd million. We bought him for 15. We brought Callum Hudson-Odoi for Chelsea for £3 million. It's just, no one's expected us to do so well. And part of the reason why I think we did so well is we did step up manager. We sacked Steve Cooper in December of 2022, I think it was.
Were you happy with that? At the time, fans were not. Really.
No, and it was on my birthday, so it was a terrible birthday. I remember it was the worst birthday ever. And Steve Cooper is the man that got us up. He got us from the brink of the bottom of the Championship after the awful Chris Hughton start of the season. 7 games we were bottom, we got promoted through the playoffs. I was in Florida at the time, so I never got to go to the playoff final, otherwise I would have been at Wembley. But where Steve Cooper got us, I think, was the limit for him. He wasn't a Premier League manager. And when we brought in Nuno, there was a lot of kind of, a bit of disdain, because there was such a kind of, Steve Cooper was a passion merchant for Forest. He talked about Forest being a club with football soul, and he spoke about the city and felt so well. And then you brought in this Nuno manager who kind of came from Saudi. You saw that he didn't do too well at Spurs, but then you look at his time at Wolves and he did phenomenal there. So you kind of had a bit of expectation, but you just didn't. He was very kind of business. He didn't give anything. You got a man who was so pro Forest, and then a man that felt like he was just there for the job. But over the last year and a half, especially with his achievements, you saw him integrating himself into the community. He was doing things with special educational needs children, and there was just a really good vibe at the club. And people forget, he signed a new 3-year deal just before pre-season this season. And then 3 matches in, he's gone.
Yeah. But let's talk about that. Kind of feels like, so you've sacked Nuno, and now you've hired Ange Postecoglou, who obviously was with Tottenham last year. But they had their worst result ever, finished 17th in the league. Yeah. But they did
22 losses in the league, I think it was.
Yeah, God. But he always does say that he brings a cup, a trophy back in his second season. And he did so. They beat Manchester United in the Europa League. So he is hired. It kind of feels like he's coming into the same situation Nuno came in, because the fans, obviously, you love Nuno.
Yeah.
And it's given this kind of vibe again. How do you feel about Ange?
The thing with Nuno was, like, he hasn't had a bad start to the season. It was 1-1, drawn 1, lost 1. Now, we lost 3-0 to West Ham, who couldn't score a goal for love nor money before they played us. And there was kind of a little bit of rumblings in the club that things weren't going very well. And I think as soon as you kind of start talking about the owner, because he was like, Nuno was talking in press conferences about that there was a fractious relationship with the owner and the senior leadership team and things like that. And if anyone does that in any place of work, you kind of make yourself become untenable. And I suppose in the football business, it's so public. And the owner of Forest, Evangelos Marinakis, he's, for Forest, he hasn't been super trigger happy. You look at his history with Olympiacos, he would fire managers left, right and centre. I think they had 3 or 4 in one season once. But with Forest, there has been that kind of feel of stability around. So when Nuno was gone, there wasn't a shock around it. Now, they announced it at 12:15 in the week, which was a bit of a shock. It was kind of like, let's try and brush this under the rug a little bit. Yeah. But 3 or 4 weeks prior to that, there was rumours of Ange, there was rumours of Jose Mourinho. And again, as a Forest fan who have been to Forest games in League One, having the talks of Jose Mourinho managing your football club, it kind of just, it excites you a little bit because he's a character.
But that doesn't mean that it would bode well. You did mention Nuno talking about Marinakis there. This was kind of the day that he sealed his fate, really. Yeah. Like, you don't go on public record talking about your boss. Let's just have a listen to really what kind of kicked things off. This was a couple of weeks ago back in a press conference.
Look, I always had a very good relationship with the owner. Last season was very, very, very close, almost daily basis. This season, not so well, but I always believe that dialogue and what you say or your opinion is always valid, because my concern is the squad and the season that we have ahead of us. But our relations has changed.
Just changed?
Yeah, it's not so close. It's not on a daily basis.
Is that a good thing though?
No, it's not good. It's not good. I think everybody at the club should be together, but it's not the reality.
There is no way you're coming back from that.
No.
And surely that's, to me, it seems like it's a bit of a calculated move.
a lot of people in kind of the fan base were saying that he looks like he's on his way out here and he's looking for an exit strategy and they're looking for a payoff here. It's so rare, I think, in football these days to hear someone speak like that, because they, like, you see the whole stuff with Isak in the summer with the players moving, or any big name that kind of is forcing a move or something like that. It's still very quiet from the club. It's very much like the manager will be like, oh yeah, we'll see if he's ready to play or if he's in the right mindset. This manager here is basically saying the relationship has broken down. For him to say that things aren't good in the club in a public forum, it's not going to go well. That's where kind of he started losing the fans a little bit, especially because this was all coming over the international break where there was really no football being played. This was all we were talking about. So when the news came, it wasn't a shock that he'd gone. It was a disappointment the way that he handled himself, because all we'd seen is the gentleman Nuno on the touchline, in the club, in the community. And then for him to kind of start picking and pocking a little bit like this, it puts a sour taste into the into the support. Now, they brought in Ange, and when they announced that, again, like what I was saying, this was a name that was coming up about 2 or 3 weeks prior to the sacking.
Yeah.
You asked 99% of Forest fans and no one would want him. Now, and I'd be one of them. Not because of like what he's done, because he's obviously succeeded. But it's just there's obviously kind of a stigma about his football in terms of, like, he plays this high line, players get constantly injured. You look at the results that Spurs did last year. But then you speak to a lot of the Spurs fans and they will revere him because he brought him their first trophy in 17 years. So like on the base level, we're very fickle as football fans. You see someone come in and it's like, oh, I don't like that. But now he's settled in, he's done the first couple of training sessions, he's had a couple of press conferences, and there's an aura about him that I really like.
You're liking the cut of his jib, yeah, basically.
Like, I love a manager in a suit. He scrubs up well. I've seen him at the City Ground now, standing, looking a bit surly in front of the Forest logo. And I'm like, I like this man. And he was at a press conference the other day. And I remember him, the journalists were asking him about, like, oh, you normally win things in the second season. And he was like, well, I've got to win something in the first season, even to see the second season here. There's also, like, to hear that, he's obviously had a discussion with the owner, and the owner has said, you've got to bring us something this season. Like, there's a nice kind of feel about that, knowing that there's ambition about the club. We're not here to mess around now. Now, I know that we've kind of, like, what I said at the very start of this, we've made news left, right and centre for the tweets of the VAR decisions. The Gary Neville being banned from the City Ground, which he still is. The kind of the amount of players that we bring in. But we've made good business this summer as well. We've brought in a ton of players again, but we've also sold a ton as well. Like, I think we've probably spent about 80 million, but that was, we were still waiting on what European competition we're going to go in. And, like, I'm going to the City Ground in a couple of weeks' time to see Forest in Europe against Nuno's old team. I think it's Porto. And I can't wait for that. Like, I've never experienced that as a football fan. I'm 32, so the last time Forest were in Europe, I was, like, 2 or 3 years old. So I've never experienced that. So I honestly can't wait for the ride. Whoever leads the football club, I don't care, because players come and go, managers come and go, we stay. So as long as we don't end up doing like what Luton's happened to them and start getting relegated back to back, I don't think we're at that place. We've got some good quality players. We've got strength and depth now. I honestly can't wait.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah,
tough game from to start though. You're playing Arsenal.
Yeah, and we don't do well at Arsenal.
Interesting one for Ange though, because obviously that was a derby game for him when he was over Tottenham. So
there'll be a little bit of fire in his bones. I'd say I actually went to the Emirates last year. It was my first game of the season that I went to last November, and we got played off the pitch. We lost 3-0, and it was a cold, dreary, wet day in London. So anything better than that, at least it's a midday kickoff. So if they do lose, it's out the way quickly.
Yeah, you're not waiting for it. Yeah. One last one. How many games do you actually get over to in a year?
I would say I try and get to at least 5. I got to a really good few at the end of last season, but there's kind of like you have to go through a ballot system because I'm just a member now, so I don't have a season ticket. I just have to try and get if people can't make it, they put their ticket on resale. Last season, I want to say it was about 6 or 7. This year, I've got a European game coming up in October, which I'm really excited for. I haven't got any league games in the diary yet, but I normally start going a bit more after Christmas. But again, with the Premier League being on the telly, I just watch it constantly. I feel like I'm such an armchair fan, but in this day and age, near enough every match is televised, so I may as well. If I can't get over, I'll do that instead.
Yeah, it's definitely cheaper, that's for sure. Well, Callum Farmer from Spin, thank you so much. We might be chatting again. It's a club that I feel like I'll need to call upon you again.
Yeah, Andrew will probably be sacked by Christmas, so the next manager you can get me in.
Yeah, what a Christmas present that'll be. Callum, thanks a million.
My pleasure, thank you.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Now, like every week, it's time to talk to a fan. This time, we're heading to London. We're going to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea. Alex Byrne from the Chelsea Official Supporters Club in Dublin is on the line. How are you, Alex?
I'm very good, thanks, man. How are you doing today?
All good, yeah. Thanks for talking to me. So you're a Chelsea fan. Have you been a Chelsea fan all your life? Or are you one of the fans that kind of jumped on board when the money started coming in?
I've been a Chelsea fan for a very, very long time. I'm in my 30s now. I've been a Chelsea fan for over 20 years. So mother was a Chelsea fan, and as soon as we got the Sky Sports, because it was quite, I suppose, exclusive back then when we had Sky Sports coming in. Couldn't watch the games, but as soon as I did, I was like, all right, that's my thing.
Who were the players back then when you first started watching it?
Admitting now at my age, the players were back when it was, you know, Duff, I suppose. I love Duff, being an Ireland fan as well. Lampard, Terry, Cech.
Yeah, that was a glorious time when it was Lampard, John Terry, Peter Cech in the goal. As you said, Duff. You had Drogba, you had some great players back then playing, and it was a serious team back when you were. I remember the Champions League final against Manchester United when John Terry slipped. But just those two teams, you always look back on those kind of games with a different sense, and obviously a lot of it's just nostalgia. But you think, oh, those were the days, they were better days. They just seemed like incredible teams, didn't they?
They did. Like, I remember when Chelsea, especially, we played Liverpool in the semi-finals of the Champions League. We played, I think it was 05, 07, 08 in the semi-finals. Like, they were like the biggest do or die, like biggest games of the season for me type of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just an ace thing. Maybe it was just back then. But it just, the games, they felt bigger back then. It felt like they meant more.
And you're part of the Official Supporters Club. So it's called Chelsea Official Supporters Club Dublin. Does that mean it's just for Dublin fans? You're a Dublin man yourself, I'm guessing.
I am a Dublin man, so basically with the supporters club, my knowledge of them is that there's kind of different ones based all over Ireland, the UK and all over the world, really. So as part of being a member of the Dublin group, I suppose, it means that, yeah, you need to be kind of from Dublin or in around, I suppose, close to the surrounding areas to basically get membership. And it's a good thing as well. Like, you know, we meet up the first Tuesday of every month in the Woolshed, and then we all just kind of go and we chat Chelsea, and like every so often we'll, you know, go in and watch a game if it coincides with a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. So yeah, it's just a really nice kind of thing, especially for me growing up, as I'm sure a fair few people did, as the only Chelsea fan. I was in my school, so it's nice to have kind of a group of us now too.
Yeah, my brother is a Chelsea fan. It was kind of strange that he was one. Like, he's in his 40s now, and I just remember my household was predominantly Manchester United, but my brother was going around with a Chelsea jersey on. I think it was at Ruud Gullit we might have had on the back of the jersey, or Gianfranco Zola or something like that. And he had a scrapbook. I remember he had an incredible scrapbook of Chelsea players and just clippings from magazines and things like that. But there wasn't too many. Now, maybe inside in his year in school there was, but I mean, there was no one else in my family that I can remember that was a Chelsea fan. It was a bit strange. And then all of a sudden, years on, they became very successful when Roman Abramovich came in and spent a lot of money, you know. So I kind of feel, sometimes you feel glad for fans that are sticking with a team when they mightn't be that successful, and then all of a sudden success comes and they're like, yeah, we've been here forever.
Exactly. I have that with my mate at the moment, a fella called Graham, is a friend of mine. He's a Newcastle fan, has been for many, many years, and I've seen Newcastle get the success now. I'm like, yeah, it's truly wonderful to see. I love seeing that, especially when fans have suffered. But I just remember, to your point, like back when I was in school, because the school I was in was an all-boys school, secondary, and it was predominantly, like, you know, United and Liverpool fans. So they'd always be at each other's throats. But when Chelsea lost, which was, I suppose, rare enough in those days, especially under Mourinho, all of a sudden I was public enemy number one.
Yeah, were you? Yeah, people, that's always the way. Yeah, when you're the champion, yeah, they want to just bring you down. That's when they start to dislike it. They don't care about you when you're mid-table or anything like that. But when you start winning, that's when people start hating you.
What was the moniker that Mourinho used to say? He says Chelsea are the most hated team in the country.
I wanted to ask you, your favourite ever time supporting a Chelsea team, was it back then? Was it under Mourinho and those glory days of Champions League and Premier League titles?
It was always a good time, you know, supporting the team, especially under Mourinho, winning Premier Leagues and all that was nice. But my favourite one that was very special to me was the first Champions League back in 2012 when we beat Bayern Munich. That was peak for me because I never thought, I'd be honest, I never thought Chelsea were going to win the Champions League after so many kind of failed attempts.
And do you have a favourite moment from the match?
Oh, of course. Drogba with the winning penalty. That solves number one for me.
Is this his last kick of a football for Chelsea? One kick of the ball by Didier Drogba. Yes! And it's the greatest night in Chelsea's history. Champions of Europe at last. Champions League winners.
Absolutely iconic. I want to give you another piece of iconic commentary from that night. The great Martin Tyler. Alongside him is Gary Neville. And Drogba equalises. And it's just a great bit of commentary from Martin Tyler. Although Gary Neville gets a bit excited. Let's have a listen.
As possibly bleak as this. Drogba! They pulled the rabbit out of the hat again. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? Yeah, Gary Neville, it sounds like he's having some sort of an episode. A Manchester United man having some sort of an episode like that. But who's your favourite player? Do you have a favourite player?
Oh, favourite of all time. It's that man, Drogba. That night alone, I mean, we'll have him up there. But it's just, he was so just iconic. Like, because Drogba was one of those strikers. There was a couple of seasons where he scored lots of goals. But majority of Drogba seasons, I thought, were like, he wouldn't always score, like, you know, your 30 goals a season. But he'd always score big goals if you were in games, you know, against United, Liverpool, particularly against Arsenal. And then in cup finals, he'd always, always come up with a goal.
Have you been to many Champions League matches?
Been to a lot of them. I got really into going to them. I think when Tuchel was the manager that season, we had won the Champions League because we had a couple of years with COVID where we couldn't go to games. I kind of made up for that and went to like 11 games that season or something. So that was definitely a fun one. I went to all the Champions League home games as well. So they are my favourite nights. Like, I love the Premier League games for sure, but the Champions League nights for me at the Bridge are just unbelievable under the lights.
Yeah, what is it about it that makes it so unbelievable?
I think it's just, it's the atmosphere, because like the Premier League is fun, you know, you got your atmosphere and stuff for sure, but it's the fact that it's midweek, you know, your fans are there, they're all, it's later in the day and stuff like that. And it's just, I don't know, I can't really describe, there's a different buzz to the whole stadium.
You're experiencing teams that you might have never seen play before as well. I guess that's a lot of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Like, I've been fortunate enough to go to the Bridge and I did one or two away days in Europe, but I saw some great teams. Like, I saw Barcelona when Messi was there. I was fortunate to see fortunate to beat us 3-0 at the time. I saw the Bayern Munich side that won the treble in 2020 come to the Bridge. I saw us at the 4-all against Ajax. Saw us against Real Madrid the season they won in 2022. They came and beat us at the Bridge 3-1. So, and I was there the night we beat Juventus 4-0. So, I mean, yeah, I've been fortunate to see a lot of kind of big and iconic teams play at the stadium.
It's a busy few weeks ahead for you. I mean, the next three games are on the road. You have Brentford away in the Premier League. Then it's Bayern in the Champions League away, and then it's United in Old Trafford. Looking ahead to this season, what are your hopes?
Hopes, I suppose. It will be nice to challenge for the league. Like, it's going to be extremely difficult to challenge for the league this season, though, because Liverpool have strengthened significantly. They brought in, you know, Wirtz, Frimpong, and now Isak as well. They've already had a good team anyway. I think Arsenal are going to be a lot stronger too, with Jokeres up front now as well. So they're the main team I'm going to be looking at. City's going to be interesting. They're a fairly mixed bag at the moment. I think they're actually below United in the table, somebody said to me the other day, which I was like, that's remarkable. So, yeah, look, I think it's going to be extremely difficult. They're your obviously main three teams. I know it's cliche, but they are. But I think if Chelsea can just be consistent, because we've got two wins and a draw from the first three games, played fairly well against West Ham away. Yeah, I think if we can keep up some sort of consistency, that's what's key. Because I think last season, we were doing extremely well. We were up there in December, and if we had beaten Everton away at Goodison, we would have gone top of the league briefly, but we didn't. And then we lost to Fulham on Stevens' day, and the kind of wheels fell off then. So if we can avoid that, hopefully it should be okay. And I think once they leave the lap is fit, it'll give us a lot more kind of cover, because him being out for a few weeks now is a big miss.
Yeah, he's recovering from a hamstring injury. What do you think, though, when fans of opposing teams would kind of laugh and say, it's a bit of a joke in Chelsea, they've players coming in and out, how do you know who's going to be playing? Does Maresca even know all of his players? As a fan of the club, what do you make of all of that?
I think when it comes to Chelsea, particularly Todd Bowley, when he first came into Chelsea, there was obviously this kind of scattergun approach of signing different players and like kind of making crazy signs in the sense that, you know, bringing players in that hadn't been heard of and then sending them on. But a lot of the players that he's brought in, he's actually stole for decent money as well. So I do think that now with the sporting directors, and I have given out about them a couple of times in the past, it does seem to be a case that they are kind of getting more of a structure in. Like, I think João Pedro and Liam Delap have been good additions. I know, obviously, we signed Jamie Gittins and Garnacho, which, you know, are covering the left wing, where we've lost Madueke, and obviously Jadon Sancho went back out. My only, I suppose, gripe with them is that I would have liked to potentially get more cover in defence and more cover for goalkeeper. Robert Sanchez is a very interesting one, because Sanchez the last season was very up and down, but Sanchez at the Club World Cup, I thought he had a fantastic Club World Cup. It just depends which Sanchez shows up. And I suppose what we can do with defence, Levi Colwill have announced a big miss too, but it just all depends on what our defence and goalkeeper are going to do this season.
Looking ahead to this weekend then, you've got Brentford, and then it's Bayern away, as I said, in the Champions League, and then it's United away. So three big games on the road. Are you still looking for three wins there?
I mean, in an ideal world, I'd love three wins. I think Brentford at the G-Tech, that's going to be a difficult one. Our record against Brentford is pretty patchy. I know, obviously, Thomas Frank was the manager there for a few years, but we didn't have the most amazing record against them, whether it be at the Bridge or whether it be at the G-Tech as well. Like, it was just a case that it seemed to be one of the bogey teams for us, so that will be extremely difficult. Bayern Munich away, look, that's hard to call. Like, I mean, Bayern Munich have been kind of up and down, but it is a case that they are still Bayern Munich, is the thing. So it's a case we've got to get there and hope for the best. I just said, my one hope with that is that Nicholas Jackson, while he's out, as long as he doesn't come on and score against Chelsea. If that happens, I'd feel a bit silly if that happens.
That's a sickener. Yeah, if that happens, it's a
sickener. That will be a sickener. And then Old Trafford, I suppose, again, that's another one. United aren't going through a good run of form at the moment. I think they've got City this coming weekend and ourselves the following weekend. Yeah. But, I mean, we have won at Old Trafford since 2013.
There you go. That's interesting.
It was always one of those. Like, it always seemed to be a case of United, especially in like the early 2020s when United weren't doing well and Chelsea seemed to be doing okay. It didn't seem to matter what was going on with the game. We'd go into the game and United would just somehow crawl out with either a win or a draw against us. It was maddening for years, I'm not going
to
lie.
At least you've got some games to look forward to. That's the best thing. And you're competitive. Isn't that always the fans' dream? Once you're competitive, then you're laughing. I work with a Manchester United fan, Dave Moore, and I love his positivity, but I'm sure, you know, deep down his heart just breaks a little bit every single time. It's great talking to you, Alex. Thanks a million for having a chat with me. If anyone wants to get in touch with the Chelsea Official Supporters Club in Dublin, is there a Facebook, or what's the best way, do you know?
There is a website, chelseadublin.ie, which is basically how you join. They have like the membership form that I have all the details and stuff there. So membership is open until mid-December for the season. I think it closes the 12th or the 13th of December for this season, 25-26. So if there's any Chelsea fans listening to this that want to get involved, then highly, highly recommend getting involved with the club. Paul, who is basically runs the club, he's fantastic. He's really on the ball with stuff. He organises all the meetings. There's like kind of social events and stuff like that as well. So, and obviously if you're there for a while and you go to a few meetings, you're have better access to tickets. So it's well worth checking out, not just to kind of get on board for tickets. Like, it's well worth checking out just to be a part of it, hang out with Chelsea fans. I joined it in August of 2019 and I've loved it ever since. It's really been a nice thing to be a part of.
Good man. Thanks, Alex. Enjoy the year. Enjoy those nights, the Champions League nights that you're going to go over to. They have sound great. And best of luck for the rest of the season. Thanks a million for talking to me, Alex.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue.
It is time to talk about this weekend's games. Thank God the Premier League is back. We are done with another dreary international break. The one and only Colin Buick from Off the Ball. He is also back from his little breakaway. He needed some time off. He needed some time away from the pod. You're back. The Premier League is back.
Coincided with the international break.
Yeah, is that why you take your time off?
I went on international duty.
God, did you go to Armenia?
One of our brother and sister stations and as part of our media group. So I do 2 weeks, abroad. That's what he was doing. So I back to my club. Nice. Off the Ball / Today FM.
While we just mentioned the international break,
yeah.
One word to describe Ireland's loss to Armenia. Just get it out of the way.
Abysmal.
Abysmal. Okay.
I ask that question often, you know, of guests and whatnot. Like, in one word, it's never one word. So I really took that seriously, that question.
I appreciate that.
You know what I mean?
What annoys me is when you see those videos of describe this player in one word, and then it's a always late.
Yeah.
No.
And then the person asking the question is like, okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah, no. You have to take it serious, either one word or not.
No, I took your question so seriously, I even committed the cardinal sin of radio, which was silence.
I don't like silence on the radio. Well, look, the Premier League is back. Thank God. It is. What's catching your eye this weekend? There's obviously one big game that you should talk about.
It's hard to look away from the Manchester Derby, so it's 4:30 on Sunday. Mm. And it always is like, and the whole cliche of form goes out the window, it's kind of true. So people cast their minds back to this exact fixture last season. It was at the Etihad, and United won 2-1. It was all the way back in mid-December, and City were 1-0 up. Josko Gvardiol scored in the first half. Who equalised for Manchester United? Bruno Fernandes, what minute? 88. And then Amad Diallo gets the winner in injury time. This was very early days, Ruben Amorim. And afterwards, he could have taken a lap of honour, but he was actually very critical of his team's performance. And Kyle, if he could only have that time back and taken that lap of honour, because there was so few occasions for Amorim to celebrate United last season. That was one of them. So they won 2-1 at the Etihad in the Manchester Derby. And of course, they have had some recently interesting successes against City, like the year before last, they won the FA Cup against them in the final.
Mm.
And they've won, I think, 3 of the last 8 games against City. So they have this weird record, United, even the last decade. Go back to the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer days, where he had this weird spell of going to the Etihad, where Fred, do you remember Fred, the midfielder, Brazilian guy, he would just randomly play world-class game out of nowhere, this average midfielder.
I used to love Roy Keane when he was doing his
talk about Fred, yeah.
He said that he'd love to go down and shake off.
Yeah.
Why are you playing Fred?
If Ollie walked in here now, I'd grab him by the... And I go, why are you playing Fred? For all managers have to make their own decision. They're walking to players day in, day out. I would look at him and go, why are you playing Fred in the middle of the park? Huge position for Manchester United.
And that's what goes on to
for
the manager.
For that one game, he channeled his inner Roy Keane. And they did it a couple of times. They got results there. So I wouldn't say this is a foregone conclusion that City will win. And then if you look at their record, Kyle, first 3 games of the season so far for City. So they go to Wolves in the opening day at Molineux and hammer them 4-0. Tijani Reiner is one of their new signing stars in that game. And you think, oh, this is foreboding for the rest. That Pep Guardiola again has built another great side, but subsequently they've been pointless. Quite literally, they lost very comfortably at home to Tottenham, and they lost last day out before the international break to Brighton. And meanwhile, United themselves, typical calamity. So they lose to Grimsby Town since we last spoke.
Yes.
On penalties. I know you've spoken about it, but since we both last spoke on penalties in the League Cup second round, and the only reason they're playing the second round is because they finished bottom half of the table last season. So they have no business being in the League Cup as early as the second round. And they lose to Grimsby on penalties. And then the guy who was in goal for them that evening is now gone. Andre Onana, he's gone to Turkey with Trabzonspor on loan for the rest of the season. They signed a new fella on deadline day so he can make his debut in the Manchester Derby at the Etihad.
Do you think he will?
I think there's a very good chance, yeah, because it's either himself or Altay Bayondir or Tom Heaton. I think the last time we spoke, we were talking about the performance of those goalkeepers and Amorim defending his decision to omit Onana entirely from the squad. So, goalkeeping situation at United is it's in a provocatively vulnerable position, I suppose is what I describe it as. But they got this new guy from Standard Liège, Lemons. Let's see how he performs at the weekend, if he does play. I remember a United player to make his debut in the Manchester Derby at the Etihad, and it went appallingly, but he ended up having a great career with Patrice Evra. Yeah,
okay.
In January 2006. So that same month, Nemanja Vidic signed as well, and those two ended up becoming legends of the club.
And but appallingly, how? What happened?
He started the first game, like he wasn't in the door like a few hours, I'd say. And it was a lunchtime game, I remember this, January 2006. And this, of course, was Man City before the money. This is about 2.5 years before they got the investment. So City were a bit of a joke at the time. They had their moments, and this was one of them. And they won that game comfortably. I think Robbie Fowler was up front for City. That's how long ago we're talking. And Evra played in his customary left-back position. Bear in mind, he had starred with Monaco before that, and he reached a Champions League final with Monaco. but he got destroyed in the first half. And then Ferguson, Alex Ferguson at halftime, whipped him off and he said, for the second half, you're sitting beside me and I'm going to show you how Premier League football works. I'm going to explain it to you because you can't go out there and do that.
Could you imagine that? Imagine him sitting beside Ferguson. What have I done here? Like?
Oh, that's not here.
And the fans must be thinking, what have we signed here?
Yeah. So now the goalkeeper could very well be making his debut in that scene.
And what about Donnarumma?
Yeah, so we could have two new goalkeepers here for sure. So Manchester City
That could be a first.
I think
for sure,
I think you'd be right, yeah. Two new goalkeepers. Certainly, I don't think I'd be very confident without looking in saying that in the Manchester derby, it's never happened that both goalkeepers are making their debuts for the clubs at the same time.
Yeah.
Very much open to correction on that. Please do send in an answer if that's wrong.
Kickoff at todayfm.com. That's the email. Is Colm right? Or is he wrong? There's something inside me that kind of hopes you're wrong, but you never are you, Colm?
For the sake of content?
Yeah, maybe just for the sake of my own self-worth.
Oh, wow. Right.
Sure.
Let's talk about that.
That's a different podcast.
Is everything okay?
It's a different podcast.
Are you all right?
Is this the perfect time, though, for the game? Like, both have had, as you said, have had dodgy starts to the season. It's hard to know really what's going to happen on Sunday.
I'd say whoever loses, if it's not a draw, that'll be the predominant narrative afterwards. Don't think it'll be about the winner. So, we'll role play the idea here, right? United win the game. Well, they did that last season. What's going on with Pep Guardiola, lads? That's another defeat. Does he have the stomach for it anymore? Is it one season too many? Is he going to leave imminently? And of course, we have these 115 plus charges coming and we don't know anything about that. Okay, that's one option. United lose, City win. Ruben Amorim, the question about his future rises again. And I think whatever happens besides a draw, if one team wins, I think that'll be the Sunday night and Monday morning discussion, the future of the managers, respectively. And it's hard to believe that because you would say, like, United under Amorim is obviously so much more of a circus than City under Pep. I mean, Pep's been there 9 years now. Look at all he's won. But it's more, does Pep have the mojo left to do it again? He has a few players missing as well for this game. Ryan Cherki, Omar Marmoush is missing. Savinho isn't available. I think Phil Foden's a doubt. So, you know, another game on this weekend is the Jack Grealish derby, Everton against Aston Villa. You know, he will be asked before the game, Pep Guardiola, does he regret loaning out Jack Grealish when he's a lot of players in similar positions potentially ruled out?
Do you think he does? Against,
no. No, I think Pep's all about the relationship with the player.
He never got on with Jack, did he?
And if he thinks it's broken up, I think they had an up and down relationship that went too far, the latter, eventually too far down, and there was no coming back from it. I think so. So that's a big decision for Pep to make about who he plays. But like on paper, they're a much better side than United in pretty much every facet of the area, the pitch. For United, it's just like, how do you know what they're going to do? Last time out, they won against Burnley narrowly, 3-2. That was after a Grimsby game. And there was talk that if Burnley had won that game, which they nearly did, then Ruben Amorim wouldn't have been a job because international football was the next 2 weeks afterwards. So it's a very interesting...
He bought himself 2 weeks there, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a very interesting narrative. Like, it's Pep against Amorim. It's poor against poorer, United against City. But for a draw, it'll dominate the sporting landscape, I think, this weekend, to talk about it. 4:30 on Sunday. Do you want to know a fun fact?
I do.
14 players have been sent off for Manchester United in the Manchester derby, okay?
14 players have been sent off for Manchester United.
In the Manchester derby. Only one of those players have been sent off twice.
Roy Keane.
You would think Roy Keane, wouldn't you? This is going to shock you. You're going to fall out of your chair here. No, just United players then.
No, I'm just thinking of the Haaland tackle.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Of course, sorry, his dad, yeah.
That's when he got sent off, isn't it?
Yeah.
So one player got sent off twice. When was the last time he got sent off?
So the last time was 2008, and the first time was 2006. I'm telling you, people are going to... You don't have to pull in here if you're driving. This is going to shock you so much. One more time. 14,
you're teeing this one up nicely.
14 United players have been sent off in the Manchester derby. But only one of those players has been sent off twice in the Manchester derby. Do you want me to tell you?
I do.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Wow.
You all right? You fell? You took that fall well. Jeez, you're back up.
That is good. That is good. Definitely teed that one up well. And you know what? You did not let down.
Is everyone okay out there?
He got sent off twice.
He got sent off twice in 3 years. 06, 08. I can't remember now, but I have that stat for you. I don't know the combination of the two yellows and one red, but he's gone anyway. But I have another stat.
Oh, okay.
Another stat for you. Another stat for you. Only one United player has scored a hat-trick against City in the Premier League era. So since 1992. In this fixture. So you have some great United strikers like Dwight York and Andy Cole and Ruud van Nistelrooy and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Teddy Sheringham, Robin van Persie and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, etc., 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 Eric Cantona. None of those players. In fact, there wasn't even a striker. It was a winger. The year is 1994. And this player is Andrei Kanchelskis.
Wow. You are throwing
the Soviet great. He's the only United player to have scored a hat-trick against City in the Premier League era. Again, please do let us know if you have other suggestions or other corrections about those two stats.
They are fantastic.
They're my stats for you, Kyle. They are my stats.
Fantastic. No, pub quiz.
No bother. I'm happy to give them to you. Happy to give them to you.
You were definitely sitting down at a pub quiz somewhere and they were thrown out and you were stumped and you wrote it down.
I just wanted to come with some fun facts for you today, just rather than previewing the game, right? So the first Manchester derby to take place, the year was 1881, and United were originally called Newton Heath, which people out there know. Do you know what I found out in research today? Manchester City had another name.
Okay.
St. Mark's.
Really?
So the first Manchester derby took place in 1881 between Newton Heath and St. Mark's, i.e. Manchester United against Manchester City. And this is a pure 50-50 question for you, Cahill. Which side changed their name first to the name we now know?
City.
Correct.
Because we didn't know about City. That's my...
Yeah, so St. Mark's didn't last
educated
long.
Guess.
There you go. And you were correct. Your education, backbone of it.
But it was...
accurate.
It was United who won that game, if memory serves me correct.
In 1881?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, you're a fan of that era, I know.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time.
There's no GA back then, you see. GA wasn't formed, so I was interested in the
your form of life, that was your thing. Yeah, and then he went over to GAA and he never came
back. Am I right?
You're spot on, yeah?
Yeah.
You're spot on.
I told you.
Yeah. So they're my fun facts for you to tee up this international window. It's kind of hard to talk about the Premier League when it's been an international break, isn't there?
Yeah.
Because it feels like you've lost the momentum of what just happened. But you know what happened before we broke up, Premier League-wise? Deadline day was actually the last thing that occurred club-wise since we last played games. So the last match was at Anfield, Liverpool beat Arsenal 1-0. I know for some people listening this morning, they'll be like, yeah, of course it was. But it's 2 weeks ago. A lot of stuff has happened in the people's lives. And mostly from a sporting football landscape in this country, all we've been talking about is the Republic of Ireland and where do we go from here.
Yeah.
But the deadline day happened the next day and Liverpool finally got their man on board. Alexander Isak signed for this new record. And they play Burnley. They go to Turf Moor. And that's actually the appetizer for the Manchester derby on Sunday. That's 2 o'clock kickoff.
Live on Sky Sports, by the way. Yeah. Are we going to see him, do you think?
I don't know. I'd say so. Early.
He came on for Sweden the other night.
Yeah, so I'd say so. I mean, there's every chance he starts. Like, this is a game that Liverpool should have been handily. They should. But they just have an embarrassment of riches now, like Liverpool. That's got, like, and they missed out on Mark Gahey, of course, Crystal Palace captain at centre-half. Who knows, they could go in for him
in January.
But Paul Joyce, the renowned correspondent who covers Liverpool, he thinks it won't be until next summer because they're going to lose Konate on a free anyway. So regardless, their squad is ridiculous with the exception of centre-half depth. And then we'll see Josh Cullen back at club level with Burnley. And she'll probably play well, Cahill, in this game. Like, and we'll be like, where was that against Armenia?
I know.
You know? So they're the Sunday games for you. And then Brentford against Chelsea Saturday night. You got West Ham Spurs, the Mohamed Kudus derby, 5:30 on Saturday. And then 3 o'clock on Saturday, will I give you other games?
Yeah.
Fulham. Leeds, Crystal Palace, Sunderland, Everton, Aston Villa, touched on that earlier, the Jack Reed's derby, Newcastle against Wolves, Bournemouth against Brighton, and then tomorrow, 12:30, Arsenal against Nottingham Forest, who have a new manager, of course, Ange Postecoglou, in for Nuno Espirito Santo.
Yeah, we were chatting with Callum Farmer earlier on, famous Nottingham Forest fan in this building. So he's excited. I want to get your predictions for the weekend.
All right.
So go on. Give us Burnley Liverpool first. Seems like it's the easier one.
Burnley nil, Liverpool 3.
3.
Okay. Yeah.
City United.
1-1.
Right. An exciting game.
Yeah. Yeah. Better than we expect. Yeah.
Okay.
City will be the better team, but they'll draw 1-1.
Colm, it's great to have you back.
Kyle, thanks for having me, mate.
It's great to have the Premier League back.
Oh, stop. I love it.
Now, this is the big question. Are you back next week on the pod?
At the moment, my contract stipulates that I will be here. Yes.
We don't know whether you're coming or going on this show. My God. Well, look, thank you for your facts. Thank you for your knowledge. Does anyone remember it? Kickoff at todayfm.com if you can beat Colm's facts and his incredible, incredible pub quiz questions there. Talk to you next week.
See you, Colm. The
Kickoff with Colm Minogue and Sky Sports.
We'll be back again next week. Kickoff at todayfm.com is the email. And if you do like what you are hearing, please like and subscribe. Just hit that follow button wherever you're listening to this show on podcast. If you don't like it, please keep that to yourself. Thanks a million. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.